we're the country's only WASH, Water Sanitation and Hygiene Organization. So there are hundreds of organizations of ours around the, like ours around the world, you know, helping people get access to water. But we're the only one here in the U.S. helping get running water and flush toilets to the 2 million Americans who still don't have them.
Now, this sounds like a problem that most Americans think should have been dealt with decades ago, if not 100 years ago.
Well, you know, it was dealt with 100 years ago for a lot of communities. Of course, those communities were mostly white. And so now what we're left with are, well, isolated communities around the country, but across every state, who still don't have the same basic access to water and sanitation that the rest of us take for granted. A lot of them were sort of deliberately sidelined from that process and are having a really hard time catching up. And so we set out with this report, Closing the Water Access Gap, to understand who those 2 million people are, where they live, what sort of struggle they're facing today, and how they're coping, so that we can figure out how to solve the problem once and for all. It should just be done.
And two of the common factors were poverty and people of color.
Yeah. The report found that if you are black or Latinx, you're twice as likely as a white household not to have running water. And if you're Native American, you're 19 times more likely. So there's clearly sort of an equity dynamic here that we need to be paying close attention to. I think the other thing that the report found that was pretty shocking is that in some states, actually six states and Puerto Rico, we're going backwards in access, meaning, you know, fewer people next year will have access to running water and toilets than this year. So it's not just that we're looking at a problem that just has never been solved in some areas, but in other areas we're looking at this lack of investment, this lack of care for our infrastructure is meaning that systems are going offline and people are losing the access that they once had.
In particular, there are two communities that are impacted in my region that I want to focus on a little bit. And if you could reiterate a little bit, the crisis on the Navajo Reservation.
Yeah, Navajo, you know, in Arizona in particular, is one of the three states with the highest percentage of its population without access. And the vast majority of those people are Native American. The Navajo Nation, which takes up parts of Arizona, is the largest reservation in the country, and almost 40% of people there don't have running water at home. So, you know, people are leaving their house every day with a bucket and walking sometimes to a livestock pond or a trough and drawing out water, or they're driving up to, you know, 50 miles round trip and spending a tremendous amount of money that they don't have to bring bottled water home. And this is really affecting people's lives. I mean, this is one of the communities that we work most closely with at Dig Deep through our Navajo Water Project, which brings hot and cold running water to hundreds of families in Arizona, Utah, New Mexico. And every day I enter these people's homes and share their lives with them, and, you know, they tell me, well, you know, my kids went to school this morning with a bunch of kids who took a shower and brushed their teeth, and my kids haven't done that in a week. Or, you know, I couldn't drive to Gallup to pick my husband up from the hospital because I didn't have enough clean water to make tamales to sell to get the gas money I needed to go pick him up, so he's just been sleeping on the street for 10 days. It has a tremendous impact on people's everyday life.
Another region that came up in your report was the border region. Now, down here in southwestern Arizona, we're somewhat familiar with colonias. So there are areas along the border that lack infrastructure, that are areas of poverty. What did you guys find along the U.S.-Mexico border? I know that the example in the literature is Texas, but what did you find all along the border?
Yeah, I mean, there are colonias in California, in Arizona, New Mexico, in Texas. There are these irregular communities that started popping up in the late 70s and early 80s. You know, a lot of Latino immigrants came and built houses in these areas. They were sort of targeted by these unscrupulous land developers who promised them water and electricity and roads and said, just buy this parcel, these things are coming. But those services never came. And, you know, a few generations later, what we have are, you know, more than 90% American citizens living in these areas without the basics that the rest of us take for granted. And a lot of them are paying for trucked water deliveries, water that they don't even know is safe to drink. So they're mostly using that for cleaning or for bathing. And then they're going on foot or sometimes in car to collect drinking water from stores or from taps on the sides of buildings or to take showers at their neighbors' or friends' houses. It's really the same sort of circumstances that we're seeing on the Navajo Nation. So you're right, there are two key populations in Arizona that are affected.
And then even another level of water discrimination, if you will, in that even those families, I know of areas around here where there are groups that are willing and able to have a well dug or to provide the infrastructure for themselves, but they're hemmed in by zoning laws that won't allow them to have, say, a multi-residential area on one plot of land, even though those homes have been there for generations.
Well, you know, when we published this report at closethewatergap.org, we also included an action plan. And I think one of the things we found was that regulation, both federal and state, and funding, certainly, are really out of touch with how to solve this problem. And we need to get more creative about the ways we're serving these communities who have been left behind when this infrastructure was built in the rest of the country. I mean, I think Arizonans know more than a lot of other Americans the value that water has. I mean, living in a desert will do that to you. And I think they know, too, that there needs to be some flexibility and some creativity in solving this problem. And we saw that on the ground in communities in Arizona, where things like the Navajo Water Project are happening, communities that are not waiting for federal or state government to come serve them, that are just rolling up their sleeves and are, you know, delivering water, for instance, in water trucks to each other's houses, and then storing that underground and pumping that into the house using solar power into sinks and showers and toilets. That project's really incredible. There's some tremendous resiliency happening in these hotspots, including in Arizona, and so it's not all bad news, but we have a lot of work to do.
It's interesting because generally in this area we talk about water in terms of drought and being really efficient about how we use it, and the ag industry is actually quite efficient here in this region, how they use their water and manage it. So we're not talking about actually a shortage here, though. We're just talking about access.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. I think sometimes I tell people this 2 million number and they're like, oh, well, that must be in, like, you know, Flint or Newark, where we've heard all of this news about, you know, lead and people not being able to drink their water. I'm like, no, that's not places that people have running water and can't drink it. That's places where people have no access at all, where they have to wake up in the morning and the first thing they think is, oh my God, how am I going to get enough water to get me through my day? And they organize their whole days around it, something that most Americans have a hard time, I think, imagining.
So you mentioned that Dig Deep and this report makes some recommendations. What are the ways that you actually, I know you talked a little bit about the Navajo Project, but for communities that you're not involved with yet, how do you help them sort of craft an action plan? Because you can't be everywhere.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that is what we do as an organization. Communities come to us and they say, we have these challenges, and we say, great, well, we can support you with knowledge and resources and help you craft a plan. And I think that's how this problem is going to get solved. Certainly there needs to be more federal investment. We need to be tracking this problem better. But we really need to be centering these communities and empowering them to solve this problem themselves, because they know best what the challenges are that they face and how to solve them. So we help them quantify the problem. We publish data like this report. In fact, we're going to publish specific reports following up this report in 6 areas across the country that'll empower those communities with the data they need on what their problem really looks like and what potential solutions are out there. So I think visibility and data is the first step, but, you know, you can't drink data. So what needs to happen is that these communities need to be empowered to serve each other under emergency circumstances. They need the resources to deliver water to each other, to buy bottled water if necessary. So we start there, making sure people's daily needs are met, and then we collect the community and organize around a larger, more long-term response.
And I know that my community is full of compassionate people who hear results from a report like this and think, how can they help? How can they get involved?
Well, I love to hear that. I mean, the first thing to do is to educate yourself, and I think that the easiest way is to read the report. It's at closethewatergap.org. But you can also support these communities directly. We've actually set up a Close the Water Gap fund on that website, and 100% of every dollar that someone donates to that fund will go directly to these community projects in places like rural Arizona. Also, check out the Navajo Water Project happening right in your backyard. That's NavajoWaterProject.org. That is a completely, you know, donor-funded enterprise that's locally led, community-driven, and I think doing some remarkable work. So if that's sort of the perfect place to start getting involved.
All right. That's George McGraw, founder and CEO of Dig Deep, and his group and U.S. Water Alliance have determined that 2 million Americans are without basic reliable water systems in their own homes. Thank you so much, Mr. McGraw, for your time.
Thanks for having me. Have a great day.